Hello from Apollo in Bucharest, Recursive Community. Our next guest is a well-known entrepreneur and an investor in the Romanian IT industry. Andrei Pitiș has more than 30 years of experience in technology. He was one of the first official Linux contributors in Romania and co-founded Ro.edu.net, a network that offered free internet to students. Later, Andrei founded VectorWatch, a Romanian startup that produced the first Romanian smartwatch. The company was later acquired by Fitbit, where Andrei held also later on various positions, including the VP of Engineering and VP of Product. In the meanwhile, Andrei invested also as an angel in Clever Taxi, which got acquired by MyTaxi, so he was parallelly managing two acquisitions. In a later stage, he also founded Simple Capital, a private investment vehicle supporting local startups with global aspirations. As an active angel investor and a mentor, Andrei is the president of ANIS, the Romanian Employers Association of the IT and C industry. He's also an associate professor at the Polytechnic University of Bucharest and a creator of educational programs like Innovation Labs. Andrei, I hope I didn't miss any of your endeavors, but you will definitely have the chance to add them to our conversation. I'm very happy that you're here. Welcome to the Recursive Podcast.
Thank you for your invitation, Irina. It's great to be here.
Yeah.
There's a ton of events happening here now with entrepreneurs and tech. And the longer the intro is, probably not the longer the life was. So. It's cool. I had a lot of years to do what you've just said, and looking forward to do even more. I think that an entrepreneur, maybe some entrepreneurs aspire to retire. I don't. I mean, I aspire to work till I cannot work anymore. So.
Okay. So once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur. If you allow me, I'm going to bring you down memory lane. And, I would like to speak more about the time when you started your entrepreneurial journey or also your career. It was back then in the 90s, in the dawn of the internet. You have witnessed the dot-com bubble firsthand. You now are also an active entrepreneur and an investor in the age of AI. What is the most exciting moment in the tech industry that, you've been through? And what is your personal drive to be part of it?
I think it is the fact that the domain is constantly evolving. And from time to time, every 10 years, there are major shifts happening. So back when I started in the very early 90s, there were very few programming languages and operating systems. To be a programmer, for instance, was something that you had to be passionate about because it was very complicated to get there. And very soon in the late 90s, a lot of languages appeared, because before you had only like C or C++ and maybe a couple others, Pascal, the basic that were used. But in the late 90s, a lot of languages appear like Java, JavaScript, C#, Python, and they gave birth to a much bigger population of programmers and of tech people. A lot more people got attracted into tech. Also, early 2000s, a lot of websites appeared and then the bubble happened. And that also was a huge catalyst to more entrepreneurship or for the domain to grow, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was a little bit of calm for a while because the whole tech was recovering from the bubble that burst in 2000. Then 2008, when the financial crisis came in, the blockchain appeared, right? And another wave of people that got into tech and started to create all sorts of platforms and programs. And now, you know, like, and this was like 2008, 2010, right? And now 10 years after, you know, there's another wave of AI that gets even more people into tech. You know, a lot of people are bragging that they can now write code using ChatGPT's features. So there's even more people coming into this domain. So there's another another bubble and another, you know, it's exciting, you know, because a lot of people discover the domain, they come and they, you know, and it's nice, I mean, you know, to have witnessed everything, almost everything.
What lessons can you draw from, you know, observing all these mega trends and then, you know, also the periods where they come down, they become commodity? What did you learn about technology and entrepreneurship in this time?
Somehow it's reinventing itself, and somehow it's like going back to the roots and reinventing again. I mean, this is what I see. I mean, it is an evolution, but it's an evolution in big steps. Somehow, because a lot of new people come in, they start somehow from zero. So in like, you know, algorithms, they're still the same algorithms. And even, you know, now in the age of AI, people start to learn about algorithms. So in a sense, everything is new, but everything is old. it's very hard to explain to somebody that's not witnessed this and is out of the domain. But
so anyway, there is a history repeating.
It's cyclical. It goes higher every time, and there's more people in it. And there's still a lot of money in it. I mean, compared with a lot of other domains, there's still a lot of money in tech. And people are putting a lot of money in tech because one of the things that tech has, and like, I know, real estate doesn't or manufacturing doesn't, is that once you create a product, like a software product, a program or a platform, you create it once and then you can sell it a million times without making it a million times.
True.
Whereas if you, you know, make a pair of shoes, then you have to manufacture a million pair of shoes in order to sell a million pair of shoes. So everything is concrete, exists. In the virtual world, in the software world, things, you know, exist because we believe that they exist, but they don't. You don't have to make another copy to sell another copy. It's just there, you know. You just buy it from a website, and that's something is like a dream come true from any like investors or economists out there, because they put money in to develop something, they invest in something, then they could potentially. It doesn't happen so often, you know, that's why it's complicated, but potentially it can be the growth can be exponential. You can sell a lot of copies from what you've built without manufacturing those copies.
Yeah, it is. The marginal cost at some time, you know, becomes zero. So basically you're able to scale, and then you, this is how you get the 10x and the 5x and so on and so forth. Yeah.
That's the idea. In practice, it doesn't really happen, you know, because you, as
tell
a company,
me about the practice. I mean,
if you have a company that grows exponentially and then you get a lot more money, then you, you invest more in the product. I mean, you hire more people. That's how you invest in the product. So you hire more people. And in the end, if you look at the profitability of all of the big tech companies, you'll see that whenever they're doing great, they said, okay, we're doing great, we have more money, let's hire more people in order to develop more products, in order to be even bigger, especially since they are listed on a stock exchange. And if you're listed on a stock exchange, you are condemned to grow. You cannot stay still. If you stay still, you disappear, you know, because of the value of the stock for a company is the future value. It's what the people think the future value will be. So if you are flat, then the future value doesn't grow, so people will sell their stock, so the company will go bankrupt. So you have to grow. So in order to grow, you have to invest more in products to stay competitive, because otherwise there's going to be incumbents that will disrupt your field, that will come up with the same solution that will be a lot cheaper because they don't have 100,000 employees like big companies have, you know. And at least at the beginning, they can sell for less a solution that's similar.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, people are smart everywhere on the globe. So in any country, you can find programmers that can build things that are being built, you know, just, I don't know, in Silicon Valley or whatever.
So you mentioned that, you know, get into technology back then in the 90s, you had to be really passionate about it. So you were obviously someone who was very passionate. But then combining it also with, you know, being an entrepreneur, I think is a very different task. So what brought you then into entrepreneurship? Was it, you know, the fact that you develop it like once and then you have the potential to sell it again and again at a lower cost?
I wasn't so smart in entrepreneurship back then. I mean, initially I was in entrepreneur in the services entrepreneurship. So I was, you know, building stuff for others, for American clients, because I was, you know, getting known in the U.S. So I got work to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I assembled a team and we're building things as a service. So I didn't. Initially, I didn't think about building a product. I didn't think I would know how to sell it. Yeah. Because then, I mean, if you start thinking of a tech company as of a company, you know, you have the programmers that are building the product, but then you have to have sales, you have to have marketing, you have to have, I don't know, communications, you have to have a lot of the other
business functions
that they don't naturally mix with programmers. I mean, they're not naturally attracted to selling software. And I know a lot of salespeople who do not want to sell software, even though I can bet them money that they're going to make two times or three times their salary, but they are afraid, I think, that they will not understand how to sell software. Now, this is changing. I mean, this is changing a lot in the last years in this part of the world, and this has changed in the U.S. A lot of years ago, where, you know, business people from any other, like, retail or any other domain, like even real estate or domains that are very concrete, moved to software, they moved to tech, and started to understand how to sell software.
Yes.
Because a salesperson is somebody who has interpersonal skills, right? More than anything, and then you learn how to sell whatever it is that you're selling. So if you have the customers, so if you've been selling coffee, for instance, to big companies, then you can also sell HR software to those big companies. Why not? You know, I mean, it's just a different person in the company. But if you know the account, if you know somebody, so that, you know, a lot of now people are realizing that, and now it's a time when also in our part of the world, I think, since a few years ago, people from other businesses are getting together with tech people in order to create a product company.
True, I can subscribe to that. I was actually very surprised at some point. Someone offered me a job over LinkedIn. And it was for a data automation software, a data warehouse automation software. And I remember going to the job interview and I didn't know what a data warehouse is. I literally opened Wikipedia. And at the interview, I was very honest and I told him, I don't know anything about this. I mean, I just, you know, I'm just read the Wikipedia article on data warehousing. And he said, but that's not a problem. This is not what I'm looking for. You don't need to. You can learn that. I need someone who would do the other part of it. So I think, you know, the theoretical part of a software product, you can learn, especially if you want to learn it. But, you know, getting the interpersonal skills for sales is something that it can be learned as well, but it's much more difficult.
You have to have them, and you have to. That's why a lot of companies were successful at selling services from our part of the world, because in services you are selling yourself, you are selling your skills, right? And a lot of the companies that sell services from here were established by former programmers or from technical people, and they can sell themselves, and then they can sell the services of other very smart people. But when you want to sell a product, in order to sell a product, you have to have all these functions and you have to be able to create a brand. Because people will be buying that brand, right? Mm-hmm. That brand of the product. And in order to create that brand, you have to have the ability to make magic, because you have to put that word inside of people's brains. And they have to, when they think of that word, that of the brand that you're creating, they have to think about what you want them to think. I mean, what are what really means, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like all of the big companies, right? Like, now everybody knows what Google is, but when Google started, nobody knew what Google was, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the magic that that you know, Google or Facebook or all of the others, they put that word inside of our brains, and now we know what it is.
Yeah, it starts to live there. You know, sometimes when I speak to potential customers, also at the Recursive, about branding, I try to describe that. So if your company has its registered, you know, form, the firm basically in the commercial registry, then the brand is the personality, you know, of this company. You basically start creating a whole personality around it with, you know, the way it looks, the way it speaks, the way it moves, you know, and also all the colors, the mindset behind it, the philosophy behind it. You and basically start creating a whole person.
And yeah? All of these, you have to create them in the mind of others.
Exactly.
And this is what a magician does.
Yeah.
It creates images that are not there, you know.
Illusions.
Before.
Mm.
It's like it's almost like an illusion. I mean, it's like images, right? I mean, when you think of the Recursive, then you have to have an image, even if it's blurry, but it has to represent something that makes you want to look at it or, you know, subscribe to it or, you know, that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
And it's going to be different than TechCrunch, for instance, or than, you know, the New York Times or than others, right? It has to have something that differentiates, and it has to have a materiality inside the brains of people that you care about.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think that I would be speaking about branding with a programmer. So I guess, in a way, you come from programming, but you learned a lot also about the other business functions.
I did create or participate in creating brands. I mean, there's a lot of things that did not exist before and now exist in people's minds, for instance. I mean, I, you know, I was there when, you know, Redo Network created or Innovation Labs or, you know, even Clever Taxi. I was there and Vector Watch and a lot of the, you know, Tech Angels. I also co-founded with Radu Georgescu and Bogdan Iordache. And now everybody knows what Tech Angels is. Almost like, I don't know if like 10% of the people know that we've been there to create it.
Yeah.
So they're not associated with us anymore, right? I mean,
That's exactly the most.
It's a brand, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly the most exciting thing about the brand, where, you know, people associate it not with the creator anymore. You know, it starts its own life.
Like even VectorWatch. I mean, half of the people know that I was behind VectorWatch, and I meet somebody and they don't know me, and then when I tell them that I created VectorWatch, they know about VectorWatch, right?
So. But I can so much subscribe to this feeling. You know, when we started with the Recursive, you know, people would associate the brand, of course, with me and also with my co-founder. And then at some point, I started going to parties, and people would know of the Recursive, but they wouldn't know me.
That
was so amazing.
That's how brand is created. I mean, you know, I mean, the mechanism is, it starts from you and it has to go in circles. So then first your friends will know about it.
Mm.
So because your friends know about it, the friends know you, so they know that you are the brand, right?
Mm.
Then the friends of your friends will know about it and they will still know about you. Then the friends of your friends know about it and they don't know you anymore.
Sure.
So they know about the brand. They know what, you know, what is being told. And it's important to have for a brand to have some characteristics that are very easy to transmit, to communicate, because otherwise things can get lost, you know, and the magic that you are trying to create will not get to the ones that you know, that you want to get.
No. Yes.
And no amount of marketing is going to help your branding if it doesn't go organically. I mean, you can invest in marketing like millions. If it doesn't have a solid stand, I mean, if it didn't go out through these concentric circles, through your friends of friends, it doesn't have a foundation.
And what is the...
So you spend money and the money goes to drain because people find out about it. They found, and if then you are still associated, let's say, and then they ask your friends what is the Recursive and they They don't know, and they say, oh, but it's Irina has done that. No, because she's my friend and I don't know about it. Then the whole magic disappears. So it has to go like that, and then it has to grow.
From your perspective, what is the crucial part to build a brand like that? You know, to let it develop organically. What is the must for a brand? What are you supposed to do as a founder to create a brand like that?
You have to really believe in it. I mean, you cannot be just a you cannot be the agency that creates the brand for somebody else. I mean, you create the brand for yourself, and you have to really believe that brand or that company can exist, and you have to believe. And at the beginning, I mean, it's all a lie. I mean, it doesn't exist yet. But you have to believe it exists already.
Put yourself.
You have to believe so much that everybody else gets inspired by the fact that you believe in it.
Sometimes when we do the branding workshops, I try to prepare, you know, people, founders, to think of it as something which is 3 years in the future. So to put their minds in. What do you want it to be in 3 years? And then we start dissecting it and, you know, thinking of what are the attributes, what does it mean for your customers, what is the voice, what is the differentiation point, like what is the superpower of this brand and so on and so forth. But I think you really need to put your mind in the future and then reverse engineer it from there.
And you have to believe in that future. I mean, not just to imagine it.
Yeah.
You have to believe with all your
bones.
Yes, you have to believe with your...
Wow, okay. I like that. That's great.
It's also hard. I mean, entrepreneurship is not just... it's hard to continue to believe even when, you know, when there's a lot of headwinds, you have, I don't know, problems. You cannot stop believing even in those times.
Okay.
And that's hard. I mean, that's not easy.
I'm sure that, you know, with such a great experience and also being a serial entrepreneur, you had to go through challenging times of the business. Can you tell me what was the mantra or the thought that kept you going, even if it was hard, even if it was very difficult? What did you tell yourself so that you exactly, you know, don't lose your faith in the vision?
I went through some bad times in different moments, right? The thing is that, you know, you have to be able to be positive and go forward even when things are very, very negative. So then you have to adjust your expectations, you know.
I see.
Okay. So, when you hit the wall, I mean, at least you're alive, you know, and you have your health, you know. I mean, if you're healthy and you're alive, I mean, that's a good... It's because, you know, I also went through a couple of accidents, skiing accidents throughout my life, and that was not true, you know. I mean, I've seen worse than that. So if you see worse than that, I mean, having the expectation that you are healthy and able to cope with whatever comes is good. I mean, and you're happy, you know, you're positive. So regardless of, and then you're going to figure it out. I mean, you have to build trust in yourself. And I would say that probably that comes gradually with age. You know, some people are crazier than others, but most people, you know, they try something, they fail, but then they succeed. So that builds trust. And then at some point, you know, I mean, whenever I started anew, because I had a few cycles and I was hired in a company, then I just left in order to start entrepreneurship again. I started from zero, you know, and being able to do that gave me more confidence than whenever. So if everything disappears and I'll start from zero, I'll be able to somehow manage to do it.
Yes. So,
but you build this confidence in years. I mean, it doesn't come naturally. I mean, of course, that everybody has their doubts when they're young and they don't know what they're going to do and if they're going to be able to manage it. But the thing is that, you know, most people are, I mean, all people that I know, they're stronger than they think they are, you know.
But I also like the first part of what you mentioned, you know, being appreciative of what you have.
Yes.
Like, okay, you're hitting the wall or you're hitting the floor, depends on what's the trajectory. And then you go back to appreciating
what you have,
grateful for what you have.
In order to get into a positive state of mind so that you can solve the problems that you're having, right?
Okay.
Because otherwise, I mean, if you are stuck in the problem, then you can, you know, I mean, you may not be able to find a good solution to it. I mean, you have to be in a good state of mind in order to have a good solution.
Do you have also some other life hacks? Like, I don't know, a lot of people lately do meditation or they do some kind of like psychedelics, or I also heard from Rado that you are a coffee aficionado.
Yeah, so one thing I think that everybody who's an entrepreneur or in the tech world and they are manipulating virtual things,
yes.
even like a journalist or, you know, I mean, because things are immaterial. I mean, intangible.
True.
I mean, you don't even have a typewriter anymore. I mean, at least the typewriter had a. You don't even print your articles anymore, right? I mean, they go directly to the website.
Exactly.
So this is also true for programmers. I mean, and also for like accountants, for instance. They also now they work at their computers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, they say they don't want to be programmers because they don't want to sit all their life at the computer, which happens in most of other jobs as well. I mean, very, very unrelated. So because of that, and because what you create as a digital creator, even if you're, you know, programmer or journalist or whatever, is immaterial, I found studies that indicate that you have to have a hobby and you have to create something with your hands, something that exists. So be it, I mean, you know, you can do like small furniture or home improvements or gardening or, you know, I picked coffee. And coffee is also very manual. It's a very manual thing. You grind it, you tamp it, I mean, everything is very manual. And the result is material. So it's a cup of coffee, right? And has material. And that helps with I don't know, mental health, relaxation. Also, coffee has a very good
taste.
Reputation to be a good thing. And meditation as well. I think that when you're very, very stressed, you have to know how to use breathing in order to calm yourself down and to have a sort of a meditation or visualization technique to take the negative thoughts out of your head in order to concentrate on what you already have and to start solving from there, you know, from that part.
Yeah, that was a very insightful moment for me at some point where I was in a stressed state and I just couldn't control my thoughts. And in these moments, you realize that you may not be able to control your head, but you can always control your breathing. You can always start breathing slower and then it kind of, you know,
and
helps
that,
your mind.
And that helps your mind relax.
Yeah.
I also used the scotch as a therapy. I don't recommend it. I mean, but I did use it, you know, in order to be able to sleep at some point when things were very, very stressful. But then, you know, then while I was at Fitbit, we were developing the sleep function and I was looking at the heart rate and alcohol at night helps you sleep, but the sleep you're getting is very, very poor.
Yeah.
So for at least 3 hours, your heart races a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And only after 3 or 4 hours, it starts beating normally like in sleep. So actually, the only hours of sleep that you get if you drank the night before are very few, of the relaxing sleep.
This is how I learned about a thing which is called holiday heart syndrome. So when you don't drink a lot in your everyday life, but then all of a sudden you drink more than usual. So we are usually at a party. At some time in the night, you have this, you know, racing heart
yes.
You know, wakes you up. I used to get this with age. You know, I think we realize how bad alcohol is only with age. But yeah. Now, okay. So we learned about how you manage challenging, stressful situations. But I want to speak also a bit about the successes. I think you have been through something that is the holy grail of many of the founders that we have now, which is the exit. And you exited to Fitbit from Bucharest to an American company, which is like, I think for many, a dream come true. But can you tell me what goes with it? Is it something that makes you ecstatic, or is it something which brings also challenges that we, you know, we wouldn't expect?
There's very different, that set of problems that you have as an entrepreneur and as a employee, let's say, in a big company, they're very different, but I love both sets of challenges. So me personally, I think I have a normal professional life that would be normal in Silicon Valley rather than in Romania. I mean, in Romania, usually entrepreneurs, they love their company, they build their company, it's growing, and they never exit, for instance. They have a company. Others, they sell their company, but they don't want to stay employed in that company. They want to do entrepreneurship. In California, at least, I mean, what I've seen and my whole professional experience was influenced by that, was that you build a startup, you sell the startup, then you work for that company for 2 or 3 years, and then you start another startup again, and then you get bought by another company. Or you manage to, you know, to put it on the stock market, and I mean, it depends. But like the serial entrepreneurship thing is very common in the US, and it's a lot less common in Eastern Europe. For me, I'm more familiar with US companies, so that's why for me that's something that's normal in a sense. Even before it was Ixia / now it's called Keysight, and I like working for American companies because you get to be colleagues with a lot of people that have done great things in tech, and you know, with VP products at startups that you've just read about, and then you get to be colleagues with them, and then you get to share experiences.
Wow. Okay. Nice.
I was colleague with a VP product, with the head of product from Tinder, for instance, at Fitbit, or a guy that was heading a product at Kindle at Amazon. Or, I mean, and you cannot really meet these guys out if you're not in tech in the US.
Yes, true.
And I also always consider, I mean, you know, I lived in Romania, but in tech, I mean, professionally, I live in California in a sense.
Okay.
Virtually, I live in California.
Virtually, I live in California. Okay, interesting. But do you see also some kind of like a culture clash between the ways of doing business in the US and the way of doing business in Romania? Did you feel somehow?
I never really sold to Romanian customers. I tried once, and I tried to build a startup, a technology startup for Romanian customers, and I many years ago, and I wasn't able to because the work was still very cheap, like getting employees. So, you know, they said, why should I pay you a license of, I don't know, $1,000 per month when I can hire 2 more people to do the same job for $500 each? And I give them also a salary, everything. Why should I give you? Why should I buy technology instead of hiring more people? Now is not so much the case anymore. And also, like in the US or like Western countries, that's not the case because every job, the salaries are much higher for even simpler jobs. So they sometimes have to buy technology in order to help them do their job, in order to. Right. Whereas in Romania, still the job market in manual labor, things that can be done by people without a degree, let's say, it's still very, very low. So it's hard to sell technology that automates.
I think for, you know, people who still have this mindset that, you know, I could do it at home. Why would I buy it from someone else? It's going to cost me money. I think they also often underestimate the cost of doing business. I mean, it's not only the salaries. You have so many other things that you need to consider if you want to replicate.
If you build a software product, I mean, I'm At Pentest Tools, this is a company that was created by Adrian Fortuna. He came to Innovation Labs a few years ago to see. It was a side project for him, right? And you know, we helped, and I helped him. Now we're colleagues there. Help him build a company. It's grown a lot. It's a product that is for penetration testers, for pen testers, right? There's pen testers everywhere on the globe, but we have mostly clients from the US, because people in the US, they know they have to pay money for intellectual property. They have to pay money in order to get a tool, right? From other countries, and I don't want to name them, and not just Romania, but also other Eastern countries, they don't pay. They do somehow. I mean, they make another account. They use our tools, but they don't pay. So
or they copy it.
that's the thing. I mean, it's hard to sell to sell in countries that don't want to pay for that.
Yeah.
And it's easier to say and to create value for U.S. customers. And why not do that? Mm. I mean, of course, you have to understand U.S. customers. You have to spend some time maybe living there or understanding them. But after you do that, you can create value. And I know there's been a lot of companies from the region that are doing that, even from Romania or Bulgaria, that have created like developer tools or all sorts of tools for technical people. And most of the customers were from the US or from Western Europe.
Yes,
because they want to pay for.
It's a question of sophistication of the market in a way. I think we are slowly getting there as well, but it was not something, especially when you started, that was present.
Still, like even for Netflix, a lot of people don't want to pay for Netflix, right?
Yes. People share the same account, you know, five of them. Yeah, true. True. Yeah. So you changed over time also the perspective. I mean, you started actually as an angel already at, Vector Watch. And then you had also the exit with the Clever Taxi to My Taxi. I wonder from this perspective, what is it necessary in a founding team to recognize that they have the potential for a global vision or for a global success? What are you looking at?
I think it's hard to explain, but it's very easy to see. I mean, if you speak with a founding team and they keep saying how they're gonna launch in Romania and then scale globally, then they're never gonna scale globally. Like, I've not seen this happening even once.
Wow. Okay.
This doesn't happen. I mean, this is like a story that they keep telling the investors, and the investors keep buying this story for a reason that I don't understand.
It's also often the investors who keep on pushing them. Like, you need to do your, product market fit here.
I can say stupid, right? I mean, this is stupid. I mean, it is stupid because Romania is the least reproducible country in the world. If something happens in Romania, it means it's never going to happen anywhere else.
It could happen in Bulgaria. Come on.
Not even because Bulgaria, I mean, Romania is the only Latin language.
True.
Former communist country that had an uninterrupted history of computer science, but also has a very particular mindset and language that only exists maybe in Moldova.
Yes.
You know, okay. Moldova is maybe similar to Romania, but there's no other country on earth that is similar. So if you're successful here, you're going to be successful here. I've seen many companies trying to get out of Romania.
Yeah.
They've never succeeded, like with tens of millions, like in investment.
Okay.
It's never going to happen, ever. So. And it doesn't have to happen. I mean, the thing is that you can launch. I mean, you have a great idea, you have a great product. You launch in London, you launch in New York, you launch somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bring it to Romania, it's going to be successful.
Okay.
That's but you don't launch it here.
And
first, because it's hard to be successful in any country. I mean, it's hard to be successful in Romania, it's not easy.
No.
It's never easy. I mean, it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard to be, but if you are successful in Romania, then you have a set of skills that are not replicable for any other country.
And in this sense, what does it take to choose the right market? Because I'm also thinking that it's not always necessarily the U.S.
It's not necessarily the U.S., no. Yeah. It is whatever you see the founding team. I mean, now a lot of young people, they're very international. I mean, they've lived abroad. They've done their diploma in the U.K. or in the Netherlands or in Paris or in Milan. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, or in Germany. I mean, there's a lot of effect. So they live there and they speak the language, they understand the locals, and they see something that can be done, you know, and they think of that. I mean, you have to understand the market, you have to have lived there in a way,
yes,
as a founding team member or team itself. Mm-hmm. And I when you do that, then you realize that, you know, that we are humans everywhere, that we're not so different. I mean, now I said that Romania is very different, but we're not really different, right? We're different, but we're not different. However, in order to be successful globally, you have to first understand that, you know, they are not smarter or we are not smarter. We are humans everywhere, but the market sophistication and the needs are different. And sophistication means needs for things that you don't need eventually. all the things that we think we need, we don't necessarily need. I mean, we need food, shelter, and, you know, water. I mean, we don't actually need a lot to survive, but...
The Maslow pyramid is the same.
We've created all sorts of needs. I mean, you know, we think that we need, you know, a very fancy espresso machine in order to make very fancy coffee. I mean, you need hot water and coffee in the end, right?
Yeah.
So all of these needs were pertain to the market sophistication of that country. I mean, mm-hmm. if a country has not developed, has not gone beyond the basic needs, and some of the poorer countries in Eastern Europe, there's still a lot of our population is still at the basic needs level. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't gone beyond the basic needs, then you cannot imagine things like, you know, I need the latest iPhone because that runs that app that I desperately need to have that app in order to call a taxi, for instance.
Yeah.
Whereas you can call a taxi from a phone. I mean, you can still call a taxi from a phone. So
at some point in my life, I was looking a bit more closer to the migration waves that happened, especially in the European Union. And I would look at the map and you would see that, you know, Bulgaria and Romania, they went and they're still actually there, through a massive brain drain, and it really got me worried. But now listening to you, I'm starting to think that we can turn it into an advantage now, because all those people who at some point decided to go out and, you know, try their luck somewhere else, they might be with the right mindset to create exactly these global companies that we're looking at, and they don't necessarily need to be locally based here anymore. Yeah.
Exactly. I see more and more. I mean, I was humbled to see that I got help from a number of Romanians in the U.S. with VectorWatch, because they were, I mean, they like the product. They like the fact that a very innovative product comes from their home country.
Yeah.
And then they can brag about that, for instance, or they can be proud about that.
Yes.
So they helped me without even knowing me before. I was just sending cold emails to people that were at, you know, heading research for big companies. That were Romanians, and they were helping. Mm-hmm. So this is amazing. I mean, I'm sure that it's true for Bulgaria and for other countries in the region, that a lot of people have left many, many years ago, and then they are now hired in big corporations in the U.S. and in other countries, and they got to a executive level.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're getting bored, right? I mean, now they want to help somebody from, you know. I mean, so when they see an innovative startup, they, you know, they want to be an advisor. They want to, you know, to help them in any way. And that's amazing. That this was not true 10 years ago. So like 20 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago it was, because there's a lot of years that passed since VectorWatch. I don't realize now. But the idea actually started in my head exactly 10 years ago. So
yeah.
But it was starting to be true then. Mm-hmm. So 10 years ago it started to be true.
I could also say that maybe one of your other passions is education. Why education? Why, you know, innovation labs? And maybe you can share also about this project. Why also RoEduNet?
Yeah.
Why is education important to you?
You know, I think, you know, RedNet was a project that was started many in the very early 90s by Nini Popovic, the regretted Nini Popovic, who wanted to link. He came from another era. He was older than me, and he came from the communism where we didn't have access to information. So he wanted to link the Polytechnic University to the internet. So he got that, and then it grew to a nationwide network. So access to information, I think, is like a human right. And now everybody has access to information, but back then, like 30 years ago, almost nobody had, you know. And I was very passionate about giving that access and helping people get that access, because I was very curious, and I also wanted to have that access, you know. Yeah. So having the access, you know, I just wanted to spread it. And and education in general, I think that from the business world, I think we need to be, and I see a lot more people getting involved, and the innovation, as we have like hundreds of mentors, be involved in the education system. I mean, you cannot leave the education just to, let's say, the ministry or to the state, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, that is important, and that gives the basic education, but they cannot educate people on like real life. And everybody is complaining, oh, you know, we don't have a real life education. We don't know, or like our, you know, the current graduates don't know how the real life looks. Of course, because they are being taught by professors. And professors, they live in their own world. I mean, it's like a world, I mean, it's like a very, you know, protected world of, you know, professors are very well protected, and they don't have to struggle in the real world.
Yeah.
In reality. So they cannot teach you that. I mean, even if they want to teach you that. So there has to be, the business world has to get involved in education. And I've seen that in the US. And the reason that innovation labs exist and is because, like all those like 10, 12 years ago when I first started with Răzvan Ruginiș, was that there were no startups in Romania. You know, I mean, I wanted to invest. I started my first or second, let's say, angel investing journey. And there were like no startups, zero. So then, you know, then I looked, I mean, you know, went back to looking at the US where I had a lot of experience. And I said, okay, so where are the, you know, startups programs for students in universities? Like zero startup program for students in universities. Because university professors, they don't care about startups in Europe, in general. In the US, they do, because it's totally different, the education totally different. But in Europe, not just in Romania, in Europe, they don't care. Because they are, you know, state funded, and they don't need to build something and commercialize something. Yeah. They don't care. So because of that, you know, I could have, you know, complained, but instead of that, I said, okay, let's start one. I mean, let's do one in Polytechnica. And we got money from Microsoft back then, and then Orange, then, you know, Berede, then, I mean, all of the current sponsors came year after year. But in the first year, it was just in the Polytechnica University, and we had to almost force students to go. I mean, they didn't want to go, you know. And now, you know, now we get a lot of applicants, a lot of people want to go, because it's a very interesting experience. So I think that education is, when we talk about education, we should not be talking just about the state education or about the basic education. We should be talking about getting educated to the more, let's say, sophisticated levels that exist in other countries. So that's just that. I mean, I just try to find the best programs for startups in the US and look at them and see how they look, and then try to not copy them, because you cannot. I mean, in the US, a lot of the people that go there, they have entrepreneurial ambitions. They are entrepreneurs. They are born entrepreneurs. Yeah. In most of the Eastern countries, people are not born entrepreneurs. It is what it is, you know.
I think often, in order for you to be a born entrepreneur, you have to even have the example of your parents, which, due to the political regime that we were
correct,
in,
correct. I mean, it's not their fault. It's not anybody's fault.
No. It's not about fault. But you know, I was thinking at some point, you know, what could have been different if we didn't break, you know, this entrepreneurial mindset with communism? How much value would it be possible to accumulate over time?
Italy, so Romania is very close to Italy. So Italy is the maximum that Romania, a lot less than Italy, because Italy, they still have the big monuments, so that, yeah, that's a lot more tourism. But in terms of, like, maybe we would have built a better car, because Italy, maybe would have had some clothes designs, but not too much. I mean, like,
not too much. Not,
I mean, we would not have been Germans. I mean, that's too much. I mean, you know, we're not Germans. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, you're right. This is one thing. For me, being an entrepreneur was easy because back when I graduated, there were no big companies offering jobs with a lot of money. So you had to, I mean, you had to do something. There were not a lot of jobs in tech back then, right?
Yeah.
Now, the biggest danger to entrepreneurship, let's say, is the fact that, and danger to somebody who was born to be an entrepreneur, but they don't know, right? Mm. Sometimes you are born to be an entrepreneur, you go to a technical school and you learn nano programming, and then you get a job, because the jobs that you can get when you graduate from a good university, good technical university, are very well paid.
True.
And the big companies, and you're going to make more than your parents. So this is like a dream, right? And but then you get to be an employee, and then a few years down the road, you're unhappy. Because you want to be free, you know. And you didn't know that you could have been an entrepreneur unless you went to innovation labs. That would show you what it means. Because you go to innovation labs, you see that there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of chaos in being an entrepreneur. And then you realize that you're not meant to be, you know, another person. That's not meant to be an entrepreneur. So then you get a job. But when you get a job, you know that you wouldn't have been happy as an entrepreneur.
How do you know that you might be born an entrepreneur?
You have this curiosity. I mean, like, you cannot sit still. You have to do something. You have to do something. I mean, there's this test. We use it also in Innovation Lab. It's called PCM, Process Communication Model. It's and there's a test. And I always thought I was a thinker, you know, because, you know, I was good at math when I was young. So I thought, you know, I'm a thinker. But no, I mean, I took this test and it turns out I'm a promoter, which is like 5% of the people in the world. I mean, I do something and then I think if it was good or not, you know? So the entrepreneurs are the ones that do,
okay,
not the ones that think. If
like
you
that.
Do things and then you think if...
So it's called, the personality assessment is called PCM?
The test PCM, Process Communication Model.
It's available for anyone. I mean, anyone
can
do it.
I think you have to pay. I mean, I've done it through a trainer.
Yes.
Paolo Altano is the best that I...
That's a passion of mine. You know, I'm into personality tests. I'm, you know, always
so PCM,
very introspective,
yeah,
and I'm trying to learn about stuff.
It's interesting because it doesn't just show your personality profile. It also shows the stages that you've passed through, because we change in life, right? Mm. I mean, we don't stay the same as we were born. I mean, I was born a very shy guy, so I was extremely shy. Like, you wouldn't believe the level of shyness. You know, the good news to everybody that's watching this is that you can, you know, can be born a shy guy, you know, and a very technical person, and then you can learn. I mean, if you're very curious, you can learn, you can make new friends, you can make friends outside of your comfort circle, let's say, and then get to know other kinds of people and interact with them and understand that, you know, business is about connection, it's about knowing people. And and if you start to work on yourself, and then you can, you know, develop a or maybe you had this personality inside of you and you didn't realize, because you know, because sometimes you overthink when you're young, and you think that a lot of things matter when they actually don't.
Well, you overthink them, then you have all the projections of parents and, you know,
yeah,
society.
So when you're young, I mean, it's hard to figure out how you really are.
Yeah. But I think there is the one question that is important, like, who am I? But then it's the other one, which is who do I want to be? And then, you know, in this gap, the work on yourself is, you know, where it begins. At least this is how I saw it. You know, for long years when I was younger, I was trying to figure out who I am. You know, I would do the personalities. I would do my horoscope. You know, I would be looking for answers of someone who would please tell me, who am I? And then I realized that it doesn't matter that much.
It doesn't. I mean, and nobody can tell you. I mean, you can find a mentor that can guide you.
Mm.
I've built big teams and different companies, and I understand, and I can, you know, guide people through their own development process, or, you know, or push them in direction so they can find out for themselves if they mm-hmm. really are fit for more of a management career or more of a technical career, for instance, to take as an example, or more of a, I don't know, commercial career. So it's not easy to figure out, and sometimes you need help, and it's good to try to find a mentor or to find somebody that you admire and that does things or did things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's like also a lot of mentors that I see right now who are, you know, like mentoring startups.
Yes.
They've never done a startup. It's great. It's all great. I mean, they're coming from business. I understand. And it's great. But you can ask for their advice, you know, when you market your product or all of that. But you cannot ask for their advice in your personal development, because they have not been in your shoes, not even for one day.
Okay,
so you cannot, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to be an entrepreneur and you're curious if you're an entrepreneur, find an entrepreneur and ask him or her, what should I do in order to figure out better if I'm suited for this or not.
Mm-hmm.
But don't find just somebody who's just had a lot of experience in like a big corporate.
Actually,
even though they are wiser than you, mm-hmm. definitely, right? You're 20 and that person is maybe 40 and they've been through life and they've managed big teams. But if they have not been an entrepreneur, they cannot guide you on that path.
Mm.
And the problem is they think they can, and they are giving advice that usually...
I think there is, you know, the practical advice, and then there is the moment where you basically learn from just watching how a person is thinking, you know, the, like studying the mindset. And I guess this is best done when you communicate with someone, when you have, as you say, a mentor. Maybe you even have many mentors. I mean, you take this part from one person and another part from a different person. You just have your network of teachers and wise guys. I think, by the way, even podcasts. I mean, what we're doing here, I hope that...
Yeah, I hope it helps them. That's why I'm here. I mean, I'm not here to promote myself or do anything. I mean, like... Whoever is watching this, I'm hoping that they find some sort of inspiration in the things that I say about my development, and maybe they also, you know, they're very young and shy, and they think, you know, I've never been an entrepreneur, and that's simply not true. I mean, if you want, you have to try. I mean, the life is short. I mean, you have to try to do things.
Yes. Where are you right now in your life, you know, as an entrepreneur? You mentioned that, once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, you never really stop. So what comes next? I mean...
I did invest for a while with Simple Capital, and yeah. we have a portfolio of 25 companies. Some of them are doing quite well. And the others are growing and they're working the next stage. So that's fine, and I have a whole team that's working with the companies in the portfolio. But for me, I mean, I'm gonna start being an entrepreneur again, and I've already started since last year.
You miss it?
because it's one thing. It's nice to be alongside the entrepreneurs and helping them along the journey. And I've been an entrepreneur, and I can help them. You know, you can ask them if you want. But after a while, there's two things that are happening. One, you lose your own entrepreneurial experience starts to fade away because it's been like many years in the past. Mm-hmm. So you don't, I feel like an impostor telling them what to do because I've been an entrepreneur many years ago, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to be an entrepreneur again so that I can tell the next generation of entrepreneurs
field.
You know, this one thing. And another thing is that you miss it. I mean, you miss creating a brand. You miss launching it. You miss having, you know, your customers are passionate about the tools that you've built. And
what is your startup?
Genesio is a startup for developers. So we are... you know, innovating in the cloud native development. We think that cloud development has to be easier.
Yes.
Right now it became very complicated. All the big guys, you know, the Amazons, the Googles of the world, they built big clouds and that they're selling to, mm-hmm. to a lot of people for a lot of money. And the cloud that they're selling became very, very complicated, mm-hmm. that the average programmer would not even know. I mean, they would need a DevOps in order to be able to set up their account and to start the servers and to, I don't know, do everything that needs to be not done in order for their app to work in the, like, their website or their mobile app to mm-hmm. work in the cloud, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a few companies that are starting to do that to make cloud more accessible, and especially since there's going to be more programmers in the world, right? I mean, with ChatGPT,
artificial programmers in the world.
Yeah, I mean, like, and then you're going to be able to write code or do something, and that too has to live somewhere on a server and has to be managed and has to be scaled up and down depending on the usage. So yeah, so we're building all that. There's a team that is partly from my old VectorWatch team and partly from new people out of Innovation Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to see how, you know, the different generations, like different, you know, someone in their 20s, someone in their early 30s. And for me also, it's amazing to build a team again, to see how they interact and to mm-hmm. see how they work together and how they create something that's larger than any of them could have done by themselves.
Is it the same like it used to be when you were an entrepreneur?
It gets better with time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because some of the things you know already and you can solve a lot easier. So then you can concentrate with creating even more value in the team and giving them more value, because once you've assembled the team, I mean, you have expectations from them, but they also have expectations from you, mm-hmm. right? So this is like a virtuous cycle that helps us all grow. And I don't think, even though I've done a lot of things, I mean, I don't think that I've done it all. I mean, there's a lot of things that I don't know how to do, right? And that I want to learn. And
what do you want to learn?
You know, what I'm doing now, I mean, build a company that's way bigger than what I've built before, for instance.
Okay.
And, you know, not sell it, let's say, fast.
Mm-hmm.
And grow it further.
Till the end, okay.
I mean, till it makes sense. I mean, we'll see, you know. I mean, I want to grow it. I mean, I want to bring a lot of innovation. I want to, you know, we have many things that we're very excited about that we are developing. We have something that's public, but we have things that are not public yet. Mm. And we're very excited about. I think that the cloud programming can be easier, can be more efficient. I think that, with the whole planet, you know, the whole resources are finite and cloud and all of these technologies are eating more and more electricity.
Mm-hmm.
We're working towards a solution that consumes, let's say, less electricity.
Okay.
And, you know, so be more efficient and...
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of things that I'd like to. I have a lot of dreams for the future, it's exciting. I mean,
have you ever thought about, the moment where I didn't expect to talk about branding so much with someone who is actually, you know, coming from programming, but obviously, you know, having this archetype of the promoter, as you mentioned, you know, branding comes natural to you. Have you thought about the brand of Andrei Pitish? Like, what is the main message that you want to leave out there in the world?
Yeah, I think my name has a brand. I mean, I think my brand is related to entrepreneurship and education. I mean, these are the big... things that I want to leave out there, and I don't think too much about it. I mean, I just do the things that I love, and they just get out. I mean, it's not This is not a brand that, you know, I fabricate in any way. I mean, no. This is how I am. I mean, like.
No, but, you know, I was referring more to, I think at some point our stories, they become bigger than us.
Yeah, and I did. I mean, I want to leave more. I mean, you know, I already left things that are working, right? I mean, there's a lot of things that I've built are still working and they still exist out there. And I think, you know, creating brands and companies and even, you know, Innovation Labs, for instance, or I don't know, Vectorage doesn't exist anymore as a brand, but there's a lot of things that, you know, will live long after people who built them will no longer be with us. I mean,
and if you have to synthesize the story in one sentence, that is going to maybe be an inspiration for others or be a sort of a wisdom for the next generation of entrepreneurs or innovators here in the region or even beyond that, what would it be?
That it's possible. I mean, that the borders are just in their minds we're not, you know, if we in any other field, in any other concrete field, we, you know, all these countries in this region were at the edge of an empire, right? Mm. We're never the middle of an empire. We're never the center of anything, right? We were always at the edge of the Turkish Empire or the Austro-Hungarian Empire or the Russian Empire or the, you know, all of the empires were somewhere far away, right? So we have a mentality for somebody that's outside of the center, you know. We have a mentality if you look at of like an edge mentality, like somebody who, for instance, was born in another city and they look at the capital of the country as being the center, they want to be in the capital of the country, right? Mm-hmm. We were in a province, always in a province. We were never the capital of anything. But this is something that is in our heads. This is not. I mean, it was real, but in our heads. I mean, if you build a map of, like, you know, internet or anything, like, we have like some of the biggest speeds of internet in the world. I mean, we have a lot of things that are better than anything else, and so you can build a mental map where we are at the center, you know.
I love
we
that.
Don't have to be, I mean, like, it is what it is, right? I mean, you have to go a long way from Paris, you know, on the road, and the roads are not very good, right? So we are somewhere, it's clear that we're somewhere on an edge where the roads are horrible, right? But in the highways of the internet, we are not at any edge. We are like in the center.
I couldn't say it better. I love that. Thank you. Wow. Thank you also for this conversation. I know that you have
you're welcome.
A tight time schedule.
It was a pleasure talking to you. And,
same.
You know, congratulations for launching the Recursive. I think it was needed. Over the years, I did involve some of the publications that were open in Innovation Labs, for instance, because I believe that things don't happen unless somebody writes about them. And one of the reasons that Silicon Valley exists is that those entrepreneurs are not just in the business press, they're like in the tabloids. I mean, they're like, so they're like the, you know, they are the, you know, the, the center. I mean, not just the football player, not just the athletes, also the entrepreneurs are stars.
True.
And who makes them stars? Journalism. And journalism in this part of the world, they only made stars out of politicians, which is like wrong. I mean, this is like completely wrong. I mean, politicians are there to serve the country. They're not there to be stars.
Yes.
We don't pay them to be stars. So why make them stars, right?
Sure.
We're creating an economy where we pay taxes, and I did pay my fair share of taxes to the state of Romania, and I continue to do so, in order to have education, in order to have a political system, to have, you know, public administration, and to have police and, you know, everything else, right? And, you know, they have to do their job, right? And you know, I admire some of them. They are doing a great job. But the real stars should be people who dare to try, who, you know, not just entrepreneurs, people who are employees, people who bring value to the world, and they create not just a salary or an income for themselves, but also taxes for these states to exist. You know, this is another discussion, if states should exist or not, but we live in a world where states exist, yeah. And state exists because there is business, because business creates taxes, and taxes creates
yeah. The
possibility for the state to exist. So the ones that are moving things in the business world, in the real world, where you know, everything is based on trust. I mean, you cannot sell something, you know, in a free world. You can only sell to somebody who trusts you, because otherwise they would not give you their money.
Sure.
If they wouldn't trust that what you give them is valuable. Nobody forces them to do so, right? So in a real economy, in a real free economy, you are forced to live up to your word. You have to be trustful. You cannot, you know.
It can't be just a scam. Well, not in the long run, yeah.
Not in the long run, yeah.
Yeah, you can be that in the short run. But I do believe in the power of stories. And I guess this is why we created also the recursive, that I'm not in a different business, because I myself was very interested in people's stories. But also because I believe that in the end, it comes down to the stories that we tell ourselves in the head that is going to define our path ahead. It's not so much about, I told you before that, it's not about who you are, what's the core, what you're born with, but what do you want to become?
Yeah, I love this, because I also use, you know, change the stories that you tell yourself in order to change yourself. I tell this to people, I mean, and I ask them, what do you think? And they say, I think this and this and this, and these are all stories. I mean, you tell these stories to yourself. I mean, as long as you're going to keep telling them, you're going to be stuck where you are. You know, change the stories that you tell yourself. I mean, we live in a very beautiful part of the world. We live in countries that are, yeah, still poorer than other bigger countries, but that are developing at a higher rate. So the economies are growing at a faster pace. Things are happening. It's probably one of the best places to be an entrepreneur, and especially in tech, one of the best places where there's a lot of very talented tech people. And if you can understand like a foreign market, a market that's more sophisticated, where you build product for, you build the product here, you sell the product there, and it's just perfect. I mean, it's like it's a dream come true.
I can only subscribe to that. Wow, thank you.
Thank you, Irina.
Great. Yeah, we will keep track of your future endeavors. I'm very curious.
Thank you very much. Me too.
Yes. I'm sure that it's not going to be the last one. Even if it's more ambitious than this one, I see that you're in a way also still radiating this, I cannot stand still, I need to do something,
yes.
Which is a great trait for entrepreneurship. Andrei, thank you so much for taking the time and being here.
Thank you, Irina.
And if you're just as passionate about innovation as we are, hit subscribe for the Recursive Podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. We're everywhere.